good. So welcome everybody to quiet time at Dhammaloka Center, where we can do some nice little meditation to get our minds really, really peaceful. All the words and instructions you can give are nowhere near some peace, tasting freedom. But before I begin, I must say that this is the ongoing meditation class. Those coming for the beginner's meditation class, a series of four lectures for those who are starting their journey of meditation, that is in the room to my right. This is the ongoing class. We're going to be sitting later on after I shut up of about 40, 45 minutes. So if you never meditated that long before, you're going to be in big trouble. So while you've got the chance, you better get to the room next door. You were warned. But anyway, for those who can do the long meditation, fine. It's wonderful to do longer meditation because you can really, 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 really get nice and peaceful. I thought that was Lynn over there walking to the beginner's meditation class. She's been here for over 30 years. But for those of you who really want to get into some nice deep meditation, obviously the longer you meditate, if you get it right at the beginning, the easier it becomes. In other words, you build up what you might call the momentum of peace, the momentum of freedom, momentum of letting go. You build it up. And so after a while, that momentum starts to get very strong, and it's that just pushes the mind into more and more stillness. Because letting go is the key, as you all know, for meditation. Everybody, not just myself, keeps on saying to let go, let go, let go. But the important thing is to just know what it means and how it works. And there's to go into some deep teachings, there's this great saying, which I only usually employ this on meditation retreats. And it's from one of the Buddhist commentaries on meditation called the Visuddhimagga, where it says, the path to freedom, to enlightenment, the path of meditation, the path is, but no traveler on it is seen. It's a wonderful little saying. No traveler is seen on this path. You can't travel the path. You have to disappear and let the path happen without you. Without you controlling, without you giving orders, without you trying to let go, which is a big problem. We all know to let go. We try to let go. So how can you do that? How can you not be a traveler on this path? So you try and make some nice similes. And one of those similes is, because this is something you've just been doing to get here, you're driving in your car down the freeway or down some other highway. And what letting go means is taking your hands off the steering wheel and your feet off the pedals in the busy traffic. Can you do that? That's what it feels like, letting go. Because if you're driving the car in a busy traffic, quite rightly, now don't actually do this, it's only a metaphor, okay? This is not advice. Don't go get into a crash and sue the Buddhist Society of West Australia. Ajahn Brahm said this, and it's recorded, so you can prove that this is actually what I said. This is just a metaphor, a simile. Because what happens that you feel you're going to crash, it's all going to go wrong, you're going to lose control of your vehicle if you don't keep your hands on the steering wheel, feet on the pedals. Fair enough. But that is, it's not a good idea in busy traffic, but it's a great idea in the busy traffic of your mind to be able to take your hand off the steering wheel and feet off the pedals on the things which exercise control over your mind and your meditation. To see if you, the driver, the traveler, can disappear and vanish. Because if you, the driver, vanishes, then there's no one there to do anything. When there's no one there to do anything, you are still. Nothing can do any stuff. And yeah, you're moving, your mind is thinking, you might be tired, there's activity, but there's no one there to keep the foot on the accelerator. What it means is just the speed at which you're going gets slower and slower and slower because of friction or whatever it is, that you get slower and slower until you eventually stop. You get to this wonderful place of stopping, of peace, of stillness, because you, are not doing anything anymore. You are letting go of controlling and doing by imagining that there's no one there doing anything. That's one simile of learning how to let go. Another simile, which is also very helpful, which I was teaching somewhere recently, was doing some play acting, role playing. Because ever since I remember going to primary school, and you had to do this role playing, pretend you're a tree, and all the 5-6-year-old kids will put their hands up and sway in the wind. You could actually role play, imagine these things. But for meditation, I don't want you to be a tree. When you close your eyes, imagine you're a Buddha, sitting meditating. You've already become enlightened. You've done everything you need to do. There's nothing else you should require. You are fully complete. No more need to do any work. You don't need anything at all. You sit here and imagine you're a Buddha. Nothing to do. Nowhere to go. What that does, that it allows you also just to vanish. So you automatically let go, because that's what a Buddha does. Just lets go. So, those are a couple of ways which actually helps. You know, learning just to do that, letting go, to feel it. And we practice that at the very beginning. This is why I've developed over the last few years, relaxing your body first of all. Because you always notice how tight and tense people's bodies are in this modern world. And you ask them just to let go of your body. You can't just do it straight away, to let go. To let go and just be loose, to be relaxed. Now I know that I get a lot of criticism sometimes because they say, you're a monk, you should wear your robes properly, you should sit up straight. You should be like some army officer. This is not the army in Buddhism. So we're relaxed, we're loose. And in fact, I still remember going to give a talk one evening, I think in some executive group in Netherlands, and in that particular executive group, there was one lady came afterwards and said, very impressed with your talk on letting go. And he said, just the way you dress is just exactly your message. Let it go. Your robe slipped off. It was all loose. And she said, that compares that I was brought up in a Catholic convent. And that was so strict. And the nuns there were so tight. Everything was held perfectly rigid. And said, yeah, that's the difference between Buddhism, which is about letting go, loose, no sense of self, not trying to present an image. Letting go, just being. If things want to fall off, let them fall off. Let them go. Instead of trying to hold on to things and protect things and keep things. So letting go. So we start that off with just our body. We keep our body loose. And the great thing about starting letting go on your body is you can feel its results almost immediately. You've got a tight part of the body, you relax it. And that tightness, that stress which causes aches and pains and eventually sicknesses disappears. You can actually feel the body relax. And number two, when your body does relax, it feels really pleasant. It's very nice having a loose body. I give all these similes trying to compare the relaxed body to when you're on the beach, you know, on holiday somewhere, relaxed, not a care in the world. Everything just gets really loose and free and easy. Or you wake up in bed in the morning, a Sunday morning, you don't have to go to work and you don't have to get up any time, so you snooze in the bed there, and it's just so comfortable and cozy and warm, and your body's actually pretty relaxed in your bed on a Sunday morning if you don't have to go to work, like I have to go to work every day. Life as a monk sucks. No holidays, no superannuation, no retirement, no. It's actually very nice being a monk. But anyway, when you enjoy what you're doing, who wants to retire? But anyway, so you relax, your body is really free, and it feels good. You have done some letting go there. The opposite is trying to control your body, make it really tight. Now, when it's really tight and controlled, you can feel the tightness, the tension in there. It's the opposite of what meditation is supposed to be giving, the sense of freedom and ease. Everything is loose, let go, relaxed and healthy and pleasant. So at the beginning of meditation, I lead people into this really letting go of holding on to the body. You know, I always give that simile of a rope being pulled tight at both ends. That's what it feels in my body sometimes. You're holding things so tight, there's tension in your body, just like the tension in a rope being stretched. And you imagine just letting go of both ends. And the rope gets really loose and free of tension. And there's many parts of your body like that. Or the other one, you've got pressure on you. You know, something's pushing you. You've got like a heavy rucksack or backpack on your back, and it's really holding you down. You've got heavy bags, this pressure on you. And you learn how to just to relax that pressure, let go. So there's no pressure on your body at all. Everything expands. And that is a letting go. And later on, once you do that on your body, you get these wonderful metaphors which you apply to your mind, to your mental world. Because so often, your mind is like being stretched by your goals and aspirations, pulling at your mind, creating tension in there, trying to be something else, trying to do something else, trying to be better. That's like tension on your mind. So, letting go, you just let your mind be as it is, not trying to get anywhere. That's one of the nicest things about doing the role-playing as a Buddha. Nothing to achieve anymore. It's all done. Just relax and enjoy the meditation. So that gives you, you've got nothing to do, nothing to change, nothing to achieve. Takes the stress off your meditation so you can enjoy it. Or just the pressure, sometimes the pressure on your mind is just too strong. Just let the mind, imagine, expanding. There's no pressure on it. It can just go wherever it wants. No force. Nothing pulling or pushing at you. Letting be. And then, that type of freedom, which you do on your body first of all, then you apply it to your mind, gives this incredible peace. There's nothing forcing you anymore. Nothing actually putting stress or suffering on you. You just relax and just be. And after a while, that being just relaxes so much that you eventually just get so still you disappear. And you're really, really peaceful. And it doesn't stop there. Peace gets deeper and deeper and deeper. I was talking to a lady who rings me. It's meditation counseling. Would call me up, and she was saying she had such a deep state of peace the other day. I said, yeah, it's like that. Really so incredibly peaceful, but it's not the end. Later on you'll have a peace which is bigger than the deepest peace you've ever experienced. And that's not the end either. Then it gets even more peaceful than extreme peace. It keeps going on and on and on. And when you start to explore just how peaceful peace can be, it just keeps going. That's the interesting part. You're just let go. You haven't done anything. And these things start coming to you. That's how meditation works. Da da da. So, it will not work if I don't shut up. So now I'm going to be quiet and let you experience to see if what I said works or doesn't. So here we go. And Bronwyn, if the baby does cry a bit too much, probably have to take it outside and sit outside. Well, who knows? The baby could be Oh, come on. It could be a future Buddha. So here we go. So, closing your eyes. Relaxing the body. I know some traditions keep their eyes open, but I can't understand why they do that. Because if you are distracted by visual phenomena, you don't have as much mindfulness to feel your body. So I put my whole mindfulness focused on how I'm sitting right now, on my body. Basically asking my body, how are you? I'm not going to be focusing too much on talking. Main focus is on feeling my body. Making sure everything is in the correct position. And I even move my body, because sometimes I cannot assume that I've got in the best position. So I move my back to the left, to the right, backwards and forwards, just to check that I'm in the best position. Always like checking my legs and my feet, because a lot of times people get aches and pains in that area of the body. Making sure that my legs and my feet are comfortable. Not just ordinary comfort, but the comfort which I know you can sustain over the period of meditation. Long-term comfort. I also check my head, especially the muscles around the eyes and the mouth, because they tell me if I'm tense, those muscles get very tight. If I'm focusing too hard, I can feel actually in the forehead those muscles tighten up if I'm trying. So I become aware of the muscles in my face as a very, very accurate indicator of whether I'm relaxed or whether I'm tense. And it's very powerful, because once you're mindful of something, once you know it, it's so easy to manipulate it. As soon as I become aware of the muscles around my eyes, mouth and forehead, it's so easy to loosen them. Because the awareness allows you to have feedback. You see, experience the sensations changing. The muscles in my face, just as an example, I can know what to do to tense them up. I can feel them tensing now. I know what to do to relax them. This thing, which is actually letting go, kindness, not forcing. Until those muscles in my face come to a very comfortable, natural, default position. So by movement, I get my body into the most comfortable position. And I feel what that comfort is. I'm mindful of comfort. Physical comfort. And if any time during the meditation I find that my body is aching or painful or needs a cough, at any stage I allow my body to do that. Yes, it does disturb the meditation, but not changing posture, not coughing, will disturb my meditation more. Once my body is as relaxed as I can make it through movement, now I do the deeper relaxation. I focus on some part of my body which is irritating. This afternoon it's my throat. There's a slight itch there. You can maybe be your stomach, maybe your legs, your bottom, wherever there's an irritation, a tightness, a tension. Zoom in on that area of your body. And as you become aware, mindful, feeling fully, that part of your body which needs some relaxation. You feel the sensation as totally as you can. You experience the sensation changing, getting worse, getting better. And you join the dots, as they say, between the attitude of your mind and the change in that sensation. Learning from your direct experience that when you let things be, when you stop controlling, holding, when you are kind, when you open the door of your heart to this feeling, it gets less irritating. You get the wisdom, the insight in how to zoom into a part of the body which needs some relaxation and ease away the irritation, even the pain. If your body has some tightness and tension, some sickness which is being there a while, it may take some time to relax it all away, but it can be done. So not only is this giving you greater physical health and physical peace, peace of the body, but you're also training these two important qualities necessary for deep meditation: mindfulness and kindness. You're generating them on your body, first of all. Being mindful means zooming in just onto one important part which is causing a problem. Kindness, letting it be, with a smile, with joy. And once that part of the body which you first zoomed into is not a problem anymore, find another part of your body which needs some relaxation. Focus or zoom into that part of the body. Feel the tightness, the tension. See what you need to do to release that tightness and tension, to relax. Sometimes if it's, say, my knees, I imagine my knees just resting on a soft cotton cushion and sinking into the softness of these cushions. Relaxing to the max. I don't stop until my whole body feels really, really relaxed. And if for some reason I can't sleep at night, this is what I do, relaxing my body in this meditation. And after I've gone through and relaxed all of the tight spots, it's so easy to fall asleep. Feeling your body. It also serves the purpose of giving your mind something else to focus on, the feelings in your body, rather than stay in its normal place of focusing on your thoughts. Here is your body, not your fantasies. The body feelings are real. It's very pleasant when your body relaxes. And when you are mindful of the deeply relaxed body and the pleasure, the piti sukha, as they say in Pali, of a tranquil body, the relaxation goes even deeper. Once your body is as relaxed as you can make it, then you go on to your mind, your mental world, which is also stressed, bruised, tired, because of all the stuff you have to endure in your emotional world. So the first thing is to feel the mind, especially feel how peaceful it is, or how agitated it is. Peace of mind. You can have some idea what that means. Being mindful, aware of that. Once you focus on the correct thing inside, you learn how to manipulate it. How to move the mind to deeper and deeper states of peace. Forget about the thoughts and concerns. They're in the background. They are symptoms. They're not the main cause. Feel how peaceful your mind is. See what you need to do, or rather, not do, to let that peace get stronger and stronger. Again, with practice, it's a quality of your mind you get used to. You can focus on very easily and quickly. Peace. Once you know it and focus on it, it's so easy to develop it.
you want to try now the role playing, imagine you're a Buddha, totally enlightened, no attachments, nothing to attain anymore. Just being, role playing, being a Buddha. Imagine what it must be like to meditate like that. I will be quiet now till the end of the meditation. Getting very close to the end of the meditation now. Goes very fast. How do you feel? What's it like inside? How much peace have you developed? And why? I will now ring the gong 3 times. Please listen to every sound of the gong. And when the last ringing vanishes, that is the signal to open your eyes. Excellent. That went very quickly. So, now we have the opportunities for some questions. The ones from the internet? None. Okay, so just waiting. So while we're waiting for the fast internet to download the questions, any questions from the audience here? From Perth, about the meditation today. I don't know if it worked, imagine you're a Buddha, but sometimes just getting to that right mood, just the way the mind looks at what's happening can change the whole path of your meditation. It's such a hard thing to do for many people when you don't really know what letting go is. But once you get the idea of what letting go is and use these different metaphors, it's such a great skill that you can meditate so easily. And one of the other things which is very helpful is when it is the time, say to go to sleep, or the time when you have to sort of die, which each one of us does, we can actually let go really gracefully. We just know how to do it. So it's one of those skills which is very, very important in life. Often say when there's something to do, you can make a difference in your life in this world, give it everything you've got. But there are times when there's nothing you can do at all. And if you've never actually trained and learned how to just let things be, you don't really know how just to relax and rest. This is one of the old stories. I said this in one of my first books about this English soldier in Burma during the Second World War, who was just an ordinary young guy at the time. He told me this story later on. And on a patrol with 4 or 5 other soldiers, they stumbled into just a whole huge number of Japanese troops. This was at war. He was completely surrounded, outnumbered, about to die. And he thought that being a soldier, they should try and fight their way out, like Bruce Willis. But in the movies, and real life is totally different. So being totally surrounded, thinking he should fight his way out and do something, his captain said, "No, we will not fight. We will all sit down and have a cup of tea." The British Army, they like tea. So in the middle of the jungles, at war, Second World War, surrounded by the enemy, about to die, he thought the craziest thing he could ever do was to make a cup of tea. But that's what they did. And in the time it took to make the tea, a scout came back and said, "The enemy has moved. Now we can escape." And they all crawled through the gap in the surrounding forces and escaped, which is why he could tell me the story. It was a great example. When there's nothing to do, do nothing. Even if you're about to die, surrounded by the enemy at war, if he'd have fought his way out, everyone had been killed. But when there was no escape, he just sat down and relaxed and waited. Waited for the time you can do something. And then they did it. And that's why they escaped. So in our world, we all know how to do things. But many of us don't know how to do nothing and wait. And have a cup of tea when you're surrounded by the enemy about to die.
It's a very nice story. So now, anyway, from Penang, Hong Kong and USA. I find it hard to motivate myself to meditate when I am in a stressed and feel depressed. It is easier to meditate when my days are jolly. How to make the practice consistent even when the days are less jolly? That's like saying it's hard to go to the doctor when you're sick. But it's nice to go to the doctor when you're healthy because you go in there and you enjoy it. You go to the doctor because you're sick. So you meditate when you are stressed to relieve that stress. So one thing in Penang, make sure you've got a nice place to meditate. In your room, get a cupboard. And when you're depressed, get your wife to lock you in that cupboard. So you got no choice. You have to meditate. Or even better, come to a group to meditate. Because if you have to come to a group, whether you like to or you don't like, it's meditation time. Or just like so many people have told me this. First time this happened in the meditation group in Armidale every Tuesday evening. Don't try and go there because it's packed every evening and you have to turn people away these days. But a woman came, she told me after the meditation, she said, you know, I never wanted to come to meditation this evening. Had a really tired, came back from work, really tired, depressed, really stressed out at work. And my little daughter came up to me and said, Mummy, are you going to meditate today? No, I'm too tired, darling. Mummy, you should go and meditate. But oh, what a nice easy day at home. Mummy, go to meditate. Why, darling? Because you're a much nicer mummy when you come back from meditation. A six-year-old kid said that. And somebody, so from Penang, you find it hard to motivate yourself to meditate. Ask the people to live with you, who live with you, have to put up with you when you're stressed and depressed. Get them to force you to go do some meditation because you're a much nicer person after you've meditated, especially when you're stressed and depressed. From Hong Kong, how do you find peace when you live in a dysfunctional and healthy home environment, and must be unhealthy home environment, and always feel like ticking time bomb can go off any time? If there's a ticking time bomb, call the SWAT team. Defuse the bomb. So if you're living in a dysfunctional and unhealthy home environment, either leave to meditate, go to a temple. There's many temples in Hong Kong. Find a quiet place somewhere outside. Or if you are in Hong Kong, such very, very small apartments. You know, honestly, I've been in some of those apartments and they're really, really cramped in Hong Kong. And I remember this Westerner telling me he had a small apartment, and being a big guy, the only way he'd go to sleep at night, he'd open the window in the bedroom to stick his feet out. That's the only way he could stretch out. Honestly, they are incredibly small apartments. He had to put lots of socks on so it didn't get cold, but most of his body was in the apartment, but his feet were outside. That's how small they were. But if you can find a cupboard somewhere, or if you can't find a cupboard, get, you know what, we've just been lent this to Vinay Kakatu, who's going on a long trip shortly, noise cancelling headphones or something. So you put your headphones on so you can't hear what's going on outside. They're really, really, really useful. Or what I have is these little earplugs. So you can put the earplugs in and the headphones on the outside, and then you're in your own bubble. And I use that when I go on aircraft to meditate. Because an aircraft is a very dysfunctional and unhealthy environment. Especially when you've got some kids screaming all the time, which you always do seem to have. So I put those earplugs on and noise-canceling headphones, and it's like you're in your cave in a monastery somewhere. So you can actually create bubbles wherever you are, thankfully to modern technology. And the earplugs which I use, somebody told me about these. You go to an audiologist, they squeeze some liquid into your ear, it sets, they take it out. You've got a mold for each ear. And then they send it off to Sydney as usual. And that they come back a week later and you've got your earplugs molded to your ears. So you put them in, you don't know they're there. Honestly, the first time I tried them on an aircraft, put them in there. Actually, I didn't meditate. I fell asleep. And when I woke up, So I went to the toilet, as you usually do, and I thought, wow, this aircraft is so quiet. And I go on aircraft a lot. I know a noisy aircraft and aircraft, but I didn't realize I still had my earbuds in. That's how comfortable they are. So in Hong Kong, noisy place, dysfunctional, unhealthy home environment, you just create a little good environment, a little bubble of peace. And if you can create that little bubble of peace around you by, you know, using sort of earplugs and proper ones, not the stuff you get just and you have to squash into your ear hole, which makes it very uncomfortable. And maybe noise-cancelling headphones, you can get those in Hong Kong really easily. And then you find that you're in your own little bubble. Close your eyes, even wear the eye shades, so even if you open your eyes you can't see anything. You're in your own little bubble, and look after that bubble, meditate. And then when you come out afterwards, you actually help make that dysfunctional home environment more functional. Just the fact you're a peaceful person in your home helps other people just calm down and become a little bit more appropriate. Lastly, I try to sleep during meditation. It always allows me to let go of the body, but later I start to dream and I am aware of it. What should I do? I think this from the United States. I think this was when I was saying recently that on my meditation retreats, people would always fall asleep during the meditation sessions. And then when they would go to bed at night, they complained they couldn't fall asleep. And so I said, very common problem, very simple solution. That when you're in the meditation hall, try to fall asleep. And then you'll be awake. When you go to bed at night, try to fall asleep. Oh no, try to meditate. And then you'll fall asleep. So you meditate at the right time, fall asleep at the right time. So anyway, I think that's probably what he meant there. So trying to sleep during meditation is, you know, when you actually go to sleep, you are letting go. You know, you're not trying to do anything because, you know, you've learned to be able to go to sleep. You've got to relax and comfort the body, relax the body, and then you fall into a sleep. So there's some things in sleep which you've learned which you can use in meditation, but don't use everything, because if you do really fall asleep, especially in this hall on a Saturday afternoon, then most of you, you're old enough now, you start snoring. And there's also other problems, because I remember I used to do a meditation group in the prison in Canning Vale. And because it was a top security prison, you always had to have a prison officer with you at all time. So in a small room, there was a group of about five or six prisoners and the officer and myself, and I gave a guided meditation, and halfway through the meditation I heard somebody snoring, and you know who it was? The prison officer. The prison officer fell asleep, and one of my so-called disciples, his eyes were wide open and he was reaching over to get the keys for the prison officer. You know, if I hadn't stopped him in time, he'd have cut those keys, and I don't know what might have happened. But anyway, so people do fall asleep during meditation, but if you start falling asleep, don't worry about it too much, because a lot of time that's just catching up on what people call sleep deficit. You are tired. Let it be. And after a while, usually the sleep just vanishes. You're letting go, you're being calm, and after a while the tiredness vanishes. And actually, just like a mist in the morning, when the sun comes up, it burns off the mist, and soon it's a beautiful, bright mind. You're very clear. Sleep is not the biggest problem in meditation. And if you start to dream and you're aware of it, one of the solutions is, if that happens often, to give yourself a auto-suggestion, what I call programming mindfulness. If that happens regularly, tell yourself, as soon as I'm aware I'm dreaming, I will wake up. Just making that suggestion actually works. It's amazing just how the mind remembers the instructions you give it, as long as you're listening carefully to those instructions. So hopefully those answers help. There's all sorts of difficulties in meditating in today's world. Here in Australia, we're incredibly lucky just to have just a very quiet city. Not too much noise, and we find this little meditation hall in the suburbs. Most of the churches and temples have to be on major highways, but we managed to get this in a quiet place opposite a park in suburbs, so it's a very peaceful place. But it's hard to find peace in our modern world. Again, in Australia, such a huge amount of land, few people, it's quite easy to have nice monasteries or retreat centres, which are so silent. It's hard to find places like that. So we're fortunate here in Western Australia to have so much peace easily available. So make use of that. But if you are in a very noisy, busy place, like an airport or an aircraft, like I often am in, or very busy cities, you can still create a bubble around you. I like the idea of a bubble. And inside the bubble is peace, and all that noise and activity is outside. With a bit of training, that you can do that, and you can find you can meditate anywhere in the most noisiest of places. Many, many, many years ago, the Burmese community, this is so long ago, this was when they had a massacre of students in Burma many, many, many years ago. And the local Burmese community wanted to do some sort of protest, but because it was an appropriate Buddhist protest, it was just meditating outside one of the churches opposite Hay Street Mall. And they asked me to come along. So I meditated 2 hours on the pavement, no cushions, just on the hard concrete. And it was opposite one of those, called them time zone, with all this music blaring out, and all the cars coming past in the middle of the city. I thought, wow, this is a really good test. See if I can do what I teach other people, create my own little bubble. And I did. It was a really nice 2 hours meditation, really quiet. And that was in the middle of the city, opposite time zone, on the concrete, no cushions. And it was wonderful to be able to know that you can do that. And that's how I did it, just making a little bubble around me. Imagining a bubble. And here I am in my little bubble in the middle of the city. I think it was, what day was it? It must have been, I think, a weekday. An afternoon. And just nice and peaceful, nice and calm. So you can do that, even in a busy, noisy environment. But you've got to be able to train yourself, first of all. Train yourself in peaceful places. And when you're skilled enough, then you can do it anywhere. That was a nice 2 hour sit. Okay, any questions from anybody here yet? Yeah. Ah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's very, very rare. But it does happen sometimes. People meditate and they have the out-of-body experiences. They leave their body and they can see their body. For most people, when you leave your body, yeah, it's a bit interesting. Don't be scared. Because, it's nothing really dangerous. You can get back usually whenever you want. All you need to do is remember the instruction. Just, okay, go back. Your mind is usually very, very obedient. But just like anybody, you have to give clear instructions. So, if you're a manager, the reason why things go wrong is because you don't give clear, idiot-proof instructions. So that's what you have to do with your mind. If you just say, oh, go back now into your body, it usually does it. And after a while, people who do that, they get a bit bored after a while. It's not such an interesting thing to do. Although, I always like to say there was one guy I met, and again, this was in a prison. He was a prisoner, a Yugoslavian man. And his first experience with the out-of-the-body experiences was when he was about 6 or 7 years of age in Europe. And something wrong with him, so he was on the operating table, under anaesthetic, he left his body, typical out-of-the-body experience when you're very close to death. And he was looking at his body and seeing all these doctors operating on him. And he was only 6 or 7 years of age. He said he knew they were looking in the wrong place. He was going to die if he didn't do anything. And so he just willed one of the doctors to look somewhere else in his body. And as soon as that thought came up, he was floating out of his body. Don't look over there, look over here. And the doctor did it. It was amazing. And the doctor said, I see the problem. So they saved his life. And from that time on, he could always leave his body whenever he wanted to. Obviously not a good man because he ended up in jail. But he said he didn't mind being in jail because whenever he wanted to leave to watch a movie, He said he just left his body. I went to the cinema, watched the latest movie. Oh, some concert going on somewhere in Perth. Didn't even need a ticket. He'd just leave his body and go and watch the concert. And when it finished, come back. And the guards in prison never knew he'd gone. Because his body was always in prison. He's just his mind left. Now, in that case, I can see it's a useful asset. But for those of you who aren't in prison, it's a waste of time. But you can always go back again. So one of the things was fear stopped them going back in. As soon as they saw blackness around the body, that's a sign they'd imposed fear on the whole experience instead of confidence. And if they could just change the fear, because the first time, not knowing what's going on, of course you get afraid. And the teachers, if you're a Christian, Jesus or Krishna or whatever your religion, that just gives you some confidence that you can do it. So it's easy to get back in if you want to. So that's what it was, is calling out the names of her teachers was just overcoming the fear, giving the confidence that she could just go back in. Normally you just go back in. After a while people get bored with that and they just don't do it again. Very rare occurrence. Sometimes when I say this, people say, oh, that looks really neat, I'm going to try and do that. And you can't. If you're really bored, it'd be nice to go and travel around, find out what's going on. But no, it's not really. Okay, so that's the sort of answer to the question. Very, very rare, but it does happen when it does. Once or twice, and people just give it up. Okay, so thank you for that. Let's now pay respects, and then we can go and have a cup of tea, or whatever we need to do.